7 years ago today, the artificial intelligence created to protect us detonated a nuclear warhead in Los Angeles. For as long as AI is a threat, we will never stop hunting them. This is a fight for our very existence.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy!
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen!
It's showtime.
Back to talking about movies in the review sense this week on That About Movies. We got the movie drafting out of the way. Guys, that was a lot of heavy drafting. Still recovering. A lot of
spreadsheet
time.
It's your turn, Kent. Still your turn.
It's my turn. I'm up.
Yeah, you're up.
Still you. How are you guys feeling about the draft, by the way? Not in general. I don't care about that.
Feeling good. I like my squad.
Yeah, I'm okay with where I'm at. I feel like last summer was probably my least favorite team that I've ever assembled coming out of a draft, and then that turned out to be the worst one I've ever done. So, you know, maybe feeling a little better this time around is a good omen, or not. Maybe I'm about to start a streak, you know, a bad streak. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, none of us had Paw Patrol, and that could be the real winner.
Yeah. It was ineligible, but maybe we could have made that possible.
You know? I could have sworn. I was like, wow, they're making a Paw Patrol movie. They've already had a Paw Patrol movie like 3 years ago or something.
Yeah.
There's no two or anything on this movie. It's just Paw Patrol the movie again.
Right. Yeah. Kids are dumb.
For the new batch of 4-year-olds who weren't even born the last time.
Yeah.
The last one came out. To them, it's Paw Patrol the movie. It's the only one. Yeah.
It's funny. Cooper was really into Paw Patrol when he was little. And it's funny to see a 10-year-old have nostalgia for something. That movie comes out this week. We didn't go see it. He's not interested in it. He looks at the poster and he just kind of got that old man smile, you know, and you're just like, what a good time that was, you know. This is weird. You're 10.
Chris
man.
Evans at the end of Avengers kind of.
Yes. Yes.
Meme, verbal meme.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. It's like, man, okay, but I don't know that you're allowed to have nostalgia.
And I did it my way.
Wow. So I'm disappointed that, you know, I know you guys go to the movies almost every week, and this week you took them to Saw X instead of Paw Patrol, Brian. Yeah. I could not believe
you,
that, but your obsession with Saw.
Russ's mom.
Yeah.
Got to learn sometime, kid.
Own, you know.
You're 10. There's nothing in this movie a 10-year-old hadn't seen before.
Probably not in this day and age, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, the movie of the week this week is not either of those. It is The Creator, the sci-fi epic, the return of Gareth Edwards to the big screen for us. I guess since Rogue One, was that his last movie?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because Godzilla was before
the best modern Star Wars movie. So,
yeah,
a lot of people having that thought in 2023, seen that thrown out there a lot. What are your thoughts on that, Brian? On far as how those movies have held up, that Rogue One is the best of those bunch of the new bunch since it's been a few years removed.
I think the story of Rogue One and the visuals and everything still, I would agree with that. I just wish that there was one person with charisma in the main cast.
I think she has it. I just didn't think he did.
Donnie Yen is
not
in
that
the movie.
She's,
I feel like it's a, I feel like both of them are fine on their own. Actually, I thought Andor is maybe the best Star Wars show, and he's great in that. I just think the two of them together is just there's just two walls.
It was a chemistry suck.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't come to Star Wars for the chemistry.
That's true.
Doesn't it feel like there's a Edwards cut of Rogue One somewhere?
He sort of kind of teased that at some point in the creator run. Yeah, it wasn't like a Snyder level thing of like, you know, start campaigning and we'll get this thing out there or anything like that. He just sort of, I feel like at some point he kind of casually mentioned like, yeah, you know, it's somewhere there, but that's fine. Like he's not, he at least is playing, he's kind of taking the high road with everything and not being, doesn't seem like he's at least publicly like too upset about how all that went down. But yeah, I'd be interested. I'd be interested to see it. Yeah, maybe we could do like that Exorcist movie 20 years ago where we get both cuts, you know, and compare and contrast or something. That'd be cool.
Well, he took what he learned from doing Rogue One. He says, you know what? A lot of money in this science fiction franchise thing. Maybe I can do one of my own. And here it is, the creator. Got Star Wars level production, I would say, on a budget of $80 million is pretty good. I mean, I think this thing looked and felt as big as Rogue One did. Who knows where this goes from here? But I would assume that the thought was, yeah, let's create an entire world here. We could branch this off into TV and or more movies if it's successful. And if not, hey, we made a really fun science fiction movie that got put out, an original science fiction movie, mind you, that got put out in theaters, which is always something to be proud of in this day and age. So general thoughts for me, loved the production design. Like I said, I thought the design of the robots, all the gadgetry, the costume work, the cinematography was all top notch. Kind of to your point on Rogue One, Brian, I don't know about John David Washington anymore. I mean, I've given him a lot of chances. I like him. I think he's a good actor. I just don't know if he's capable of doing what we're asking him to do, like in Tenet, in this. It's a lot. And maybe if this is a bigger name, not bigger name, but just different actor, it could maybe be a little bit more effective for me. But some of the story elements I thought were a bit lacking, but I thought mainly lacking because another AI movie. Which I, you know, this is going to be that going in, but
right,
just
right.
Somebody else doing, you know, an AI thing, which is a hard sell for me at this point in time. And so, yeah, I would say overall, things to really appreciate about this and things that I wish were better. But, you know, I went into this with the expectations like this is going to be the best sci-fi movie I've seen in 20 years. And it's good, but you know, thought it could be better. Brian.
Yeah, I'm a little conflicted here. I was really excited about this. I love science fiction. At this point, there's just not a whole lot of original sci-fi that makes it to the big screen, especially on a mid to large budget. This was a, you know, $80-ish million. That's in many ways, I'm incredibly impressed that they were able to do what they did with 80 million. That's awesome. But that also kind of a little bit changes the math for like the expectation and things like that. We just don't get a lot of movies like this, and I root for them when they do happen because I want more. But I also know, kind of expect, like, yeah, it's probably, science fiction's a hard sell when it's on, when it's not a property and it's not a star that somebody, you know, is going to see a movie for. So I was a little nervous about that. I was very excited. I think the world building here and the production design is unbelievably great. Like, I would buy a coffee table book, you know, with like the art of the creator or whatever. I mean, I think it looks awesome. And I love when science fiction blends modern technology with like future technology and stuff. I love that. I think it looks
and also
so cool.
Old technology too.
Yeah,
there's same, some things totally. In here,
yeah.
Like the translator.
Yeah.
It's like, well,
yeah.
Wouldn't they have some kind of smartphone doing that?
Right.
No, it's like this weird.
I love
it
that.
Felt like a 1940s World War II gadget or something.
Yes,
it was awesome.
Yes, I think that there's like a, I don't know. It's just something. So there's something cool to me about kind of paying homage to the origins of science fiction and the, you know, the 40s and 50s and the, you know, dime store paperbacks and things like that with some of that technology. And like when the Vision, when 2065 still has stuff in it that that feels like it, it would be something that was imagined by Robert Heinlein or something like that. You know, I love that. I think it's really cool. And even if it's some places where you're like, I don't even know if that would make sense, I don't care. I think it's cool. And I love that concept. I dug large portions of this. And I'm going to give it a good grade. And I hope that Gareth Edwards will not take 7 more years, you know, between movies. But I do have some holdbacks and some criticisms, and they frustrate me a little bit because there were portions of this that felt like primed to come in here and say, man, this was a freaking masterpiece. This is the best movie of the year, you know, all these things. And it didn't quite go that route. And that kind of annoys me, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm maybe a little frustrated of what we left on the table because of how good the other stuff is. And maybe that's unfair in some ways. So I really dig this. I wish that I dug it more than I do. And that's general thoughts for me. How about you, Arby?
Yeah, no, I dug it a lot, actually. And I think I just really like his sensibility, I suppose. I'm not as hardcore into sci-fi for you, so I probably, as you rather, so I probably don't see the pitches that it's missing swinging at, you know?
Sure.
I'm just kind of in it, and I liked it. I thought I liked it more. You know, there's a lot asked of this movie in terms of like, it's like the only thing out other than Saw, and it's in a writer at the end of the writers and actors strikes, and it's just, so they couldn't really promote it in any kind of interesting way. So it really has to.
By hiring random people to dress like the
robots.
That was actually pretty awesome marketing campaign to go to like NFL games or whatever. Smile. Yeah. Was it?
Yes.
The same marketing company.
If it was the same actors. It's been different makeup. No.
Got it.
I ever sent you guys the great smile tweet, the Stravos one, I think. There was some injury in a football game or something. Someone like broke his leg, and then someone screenshotted it. And the whole timeline is just different sports figures being like, oh my God, that looks bad. Oh, I think it was the Tua when he had the hands. Remember when he had the concussion in his hands? So that happened the same time as there was a baseball game with the smile people. And the woman from the smile was like smiling behind home plate. And this guy was like, so it's like, oh my God, that looks bad. Oh my, how could they put Tua back in? Oh my God, I hope he's all right. And then just one guy's in the midst of all that just is like, I would totally bang the smile lady or something like that. It's like the funniest Twitter screenshot of all time. But he just wasn't watching the football and his timing was terrible.
I remember that during that smile campaign, there was some rain delay at a baseball game. And so the baseball game went into rain delay for like 3 hours, and the smile lady just stayed by herself in the stands smiling the entire time.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I don't like that at all.
Did you guys have that thought with the Toy Story game this weekend? You know?
Yes. Where yes.
You're like, there's another
what if
there's DeMar Hamlin situation?
Right. Well, they're bringing out the army men now to tend to the...
Like, what would they do? I mean, God forbid, obviously. Right. I'm not trying to make light of that, but like...
Yeah.
It was like, it's so funny. And it's like, stuff happens in football games, guys. Right. Like, I don't... Yeah. This is a commitment.
Yeah. Death is a normal part of life, kids. And just starts explaining it. Yeah.
They had to have some kind of backup plan where they were just...
It was on flex. A delay.
It would just flex to like actual Toy Story or something.
I would love
it. It was on a pretty significant delay because I tuned in. I looked at my phone to see what it was on. You know, I was like, I don't know. I didn't realize it was ESPN and Disney Plus. I was like, where do I need to go for this? And I saw the score. And then when I flipped to finally got it on Disney Plus, it was probably... It might have been like 3 minutes behind. I mean, it was a ways. Yeah. I'm sure they have to figure out the animation side of it, you know, all that stuff. But
to render it out,
yeah. Maybe they just like cut it out. Like, oh, we're now just watch Toy Story for a few minutes, kids. Like, just don't.
booger funniest just part of that morphs into real booger and is like really sad.
Yeah, I was gonna say they had to book the announcer named Booger because it's a kids show. It's like kids will love someone named Booger.
Right.
Doesn't matter if he can call a game or not, but can he call toys? That was his niche. He's like not great at football, but like you put him on like action figure play by play. I mean, he lights it up. Yeah. The creator. Richard, continue with your thought there.
I'm with you on JD Dubs, by the way. He is now officially in my good actor but not a movie star column that I keep in my spreadsheet, which is not a knock, by the way. There are like 11 movie stars, and then five or six of them are dudes. So, you know, not you can be the... you can
all over the age of 60.
True. For sure. So, he's not just going to like charisma his way through something.
Yes.
For me, it's got to be really, really, you know, he, and by the way, talk about someone who you would say is definitely a movie star in terms of like celebrity, but isn't that either. He's like, he's kind of like an Affleck. Like, if the material is really good, he can be really good, but he's not going to be, he's probably a better actor than Affleck, but he's not going to raise anything. And so the parts of this that are uneven are sort of, I thought, exaggerated by, that probably could have been covered up with like, you know, peak, I don't know, whoever. The supporting cast in this is pretty interesting. It's cool to see like Allison Janney in this type of role.
American Treasure, Allison Janney.
You're absolutely right. Sturgill. That was interesting. Kind of cool. The year of Sturgill in movies, I guess.
Sturgill is like a not even low key, just a great actor.
He's
in so much stuff, and you would think he was like a Juilliard trained actor. Like, man, this guy, like he could have been an actor before he was a musician. He's got the real deal. I think he's going to be in what is it, Killers of the Flower Moon?
Yeah, him and Isabel both.
Yeah.
Isabel gonna out act Sturgill, Brian? That's a real.
I would put my money on Sturgill at this point. I think he's actually got a little acting chops. I don't know if Isabel does or not. But we'll see. Isabel's better on Twitter though, so there's that.
For sure, but yeah. So it's a movie that definitely needs, I think, would be raised 15 enjoyment points more. Not unlike your criticism, by the way, of Rogue One, Brian, with like a very charismatic lead. It doesn't seem like Gareth is interested in that as much. Just really goes for solid actors, but kind of writes these movies that would lend themselves so much more to, you know, someone's that. So that's interesting. But yeah, I thought this was really well made. It's the kind of sci-fi that I liked, that I enjoy. It didn't go, it kind of walked that line well for me. So I came out of this, gosh, in some ways kind of on fire for it, just because I expected to be, you know, annoyed to, I was annoyed I had to go see it because I've had a busy few days.
Sure.
And then like was like, oh, I'm so glad I saw it in the theater, which I haven't had that feeling in a while, you know. Most of the time it's like, why wasn't that on Peacock whenever I have to go? So as I walked out of Oppenheimer on 90 millimeter IMAX, I said, God, that would have been just as good on you know, BritBox, but
iPhone 4, right?
No, but I am that jerk. I'm, you know, I'm the anti Shane a lot of times just because of scheduling. But I didn't. I was like, that was cool. I'm glad I did that. So that made me like raise it maybe a grade and a half. I don't know. I also feel like, you know, maybe it's the bias of Rogue One. I came out of that really digging that, and even though I couldn't stand Diego in it, but I did come out of that really liking that movie, and it's aged well, and I'm wondering if this one will too, if this is one in five or 10 years people go, that's a really it's gonna be kind of culty.
Yeah,
you ever seen The Creator? It's kind of a fun, I can see that movie definitely being that.
It has a bit of
course that. All that depends on what streamer it ends up on and you know where that goes over the next 10 years, but in a normal world I could see it gaining quite the following over time.
Sure.
It's got a bit of, you know, District 9-ness to it, I would say. I mean, if I'm comparing the two, I probably like District 9 more coming out than I did this one, at least on first reaction. What I was going in expecting, just how highly I think of Gareth Edwards, I was going in expecting Ex Machina, And I feel like I left with the feeling of when I went and saw that. What's that Matt Damon one with the big ring around the earth?
Elysium.
That's what it felt like to me.
Okay.
More along those lines with a little more, I don't know, Spielberg-y aspects, especially with AI, the movie, and Elysium than it did. I thought it would be a little more smart, and maybe this is one where we can get into spoilers for this one. I thought it would be a little more smart about how it commented on AI and what that means. I thought this would be the definitive AI movie of this time, with how this thing was hyped up, the trailers, the people involved, how it looked, all the things, all that we know now about AI, especially. And it felt, very typical Hollywood fare. It felt like, you know, Mission Impossible, what they did a couple months ago on this same topic. It felt like that, but with a big spaceship in the sky this time instead.
Yeah,
is that where your complaints stem from?
My main complaint is the script. I think this script's kind of not good. And it's not in the settings. It's not even in the, I mean, there's some dialogue, but like at this, I'm getting to the point where I just need to, I feel like there's going to be 10 movies a year that have good dialogue and the rest are going to be bad. And I just need to live with that at this point. And it wasn't egregious bad dialogue or anything like that. There just were a few like, that's a little cringy, but that's fine. Whatever. I don't like the structure of, I just don't like the structure. I think it's told in a, it's not in a nonlinear way. The ending feels a little bit anticlimactic.
It's so predictable to me.
But it's not even that.
I figured it out in the first 5 minutes. Like what
the problem for, the problem for me wasn't even, is not the predictability. It was just the like, the way that it all unfolds, there's this element of this movie that I actually really liked, which was almost Terrence Malickian. I don't know. It has like a slight sense of just like wandering. It kind of wanders in this world that it's created, and you get that with the like the title cards for each act, you know, with the child and the mother and whatnot. The movie, he kind of lets it linger a little bit and explore its world. And I like that. I thought it was really cool. The last 20 minutes feel really poorly paced to me. And I just think that that's a story problem. I think that the structure of the story leads itself to feeling like we've already sort of, I don't know. The main point of this has already been accomplished, and then it's like almost an epilogue of like, oh right, by the way, we got to blow up the Nomad. I don't know. It feels like they could have reshuffled those cards a little bit on the storyboard, and the movie would have been better for me, and the story would have flowed a little bit better together. And yes, you're right, Ken. Like it is predictable, and that's fine. I don't care. I really don't care all that much about predictability. It's just the execution of the predictability, and so. I don't know. Like I liked the kind of Malicky vibes of a lot of what was going on here. And then to end it with those last 20-ish minutes being, again, in my opinion, like actually like kind of poorly paced. And we've got to make sure we blow up the Nomad after we've gone through all these other things. It just I wish that there was a little bit more, maybe a little tightening up. And I don't mean the runtime. The runtime's fine, whatever. The story is a little loose in places, and I feel like it was kind of an easy fix maybe to make those, to tighten those up a little bit and make them a little bit better. And to your point, Richard, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think John David Washington was fine in this. This is a movie that does, especially again, to me, the way it's structured, it does kind of call for a movie star performance, an elevated movie star performance kind of thing. And I did not get that with him. And it's fine. Again, I'm not saying he was bad at all. He was fine. He was good. Just maybe needed a little bit more charisma. Maybe needed a little more bump from that if we're going to do it this way. So I don't know. Like I'm glad that he got to make the movie he wanted. I wanted a little bit more from the story side of things, because I felt like that ending should have wrecked me, if I'm being honest. But for me, like as much as I like get emotional in movies and all that stuff. And I thought the girl was great, all these sort of things. And I kind of got to the end and I was like, all right,
in that moment,
cool. I'm moving on. And I should not feel that, me, cause I'm a big giant movie baby. You know, I should have been more emotionally impacted. And I think I was just having so much trouble being like, we already kind of went through what I felt like was the end. And now we're tacking on this sort of important epilogue. It just was a weird vibe on that front.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Some things that I did appreciate though was the Nomad. I thought was cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. Production design, again, was incredible.
I don't know what that laser thing is that it was shooting down and scanning the ground, but it looked awesome. So yeah, I'll give it a pass. I love Gareth Edwards' sense of scale. I think he does scale better than anybody in terms of like, if I'm showing something that's large, I know how to make it look large. And he's done that with all of his films, with Monsters, Godzilla, Rogue One, this one. And it's really apparent in the big wide shots of the nuking, when the Nomad is nuking the cities and it just pulls away and you see this tiny bomb going down and creating this huge, those were awesome. I mean, it was gorgeous, almost terrifyingly gorgeous in an Apocalypse Now kind of way. And gosh, I just want him to do like big scale monster movies with giant things. That seems to be his niche. Things larger than life that he can show off. Alien spaceships or creatures or whatever. I'm with you. Maybe he'll do Honey, I Blew Up the Kid next.
Yeah. I do feel like this movie gives a tease of his, how do I phrase that? I mean, prior to this movie, and maybe this is a little bit of what you're talking. I want to get to you, Richard. I want to follow up on what you started with, but maybe this is kind of a little bit of what you're thinking, or maybe we're completely on different wavelengths. I don't know. But coming into this movie, I would have guessed that, like, yeah, Gareth Edwards is definitely somebody who is capable of making an incredible world and a beautiful looking movie and all of these things. I'm not sure that he's going to make a great movie. And this was like, this kind of changed my feeling on that. The frustrations that I have are largely due to how good so many pieces of this thing are. And I did kind of come out feeling like he might be capable of making a great movie. You're right, Kate. Like, maybe he just goes back to making giant monster movies, and he's really freaking good at that. That Godzilla movie he made is awesome. Rewatched that like a month or two ago with Coop, and
so good.
It's awesome. I mean, I think it's a really good movie. But
how many times have you watched it since it came out?
Way more than I would have guessed. I mean, I never cared about it all about Godzilla growing up, but gosh, that movie's, some of the scenes in that are unbelievable.
Does anyone do a SWAT team better than Gareth Edwards?
Yeah, like, sure. Like, for sure.
All of his movies, there's some kind of SWAT scenario, stormtroopers or something, and they're storming in, and it looks awesome, man.
Yeah, he's so good. Absolutely. At it. But I did feel like this movie, as much as it was predictable in places, and as much as the AI thing is gonna get real tired real fast if it's not already, I did think that it gave you sort of a glimpse of his like deeper intentions and abilities as far as like making a great movie. I think that he's definitely capable of that now. I think this could have been a movie that I'm saying is an A+ best movie I've seen this year kind of thing, with without really too much changing, just a few things here and there. But it all starts with his world building is unbelievable. This is so cool and beautiful and good looking, and the robots are awesome. And I wish that some of the human elements were a little bit tighter.
Yeah, you gotta wonder why Star Wars didn't sign him up for his own trilogy. Seems like Rogue One was everything they wanted it to be, and
wasn't all the success. Kind of disappointing, all box the money. Office wise.
No. Fans loved it, still love it. He's somebody.
There's the Gilroy of all that, and what part was him, and what part was Gilroy, and how did that all come together, and whatnot? There's been conflicting reports on that, you know. So I don't know.
On the direction side of it,
to make of that, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, there's some people that will tell you that Gilroy directed 75% of the movie that's on that screen, you know.
And well, Gareth Edwards did this one. This one's, I think this one's proof that he could do a Star Wars trilogy if he wanted to. Mm-hmm. Seems to have the vision for it. And probably,
I mean, he's no Josh Trank, but otherwise,
yeah. he's not. That's for sure. Part of the reason why it took him so long to come out with this was this is a lot of world building. I mean, a lot of production design. Yeah. I mean, you got to think of everything. I thought the, what do they call them, Sentinels in this? That was all cool. The what you would call androids in most movies,
the simulants
or simulants in Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. That was a really cool design with the see-through heads. I don't know how they did that. It was probably a lot of hard work by guys painting out some green there with the digital artists. But I thought the effect was really cool and a good bit. And I thought the actual robots themselves, like the full-on robots, the robot cops and all that, mm-hmm. it felt original. It didn't feel like a ripoff of Star Wars or anything like that. Had, mm-hmm. I guess, a hint of District 9 in there in terms of production design, but awesome. I mean, it looked mm-hmm. so real and couldn't tell if it was CG or if it was a guy in a costume that they painted out certain parts or what. And that's what I loved. Like, the line was blurred so well between practical and CG with this.
It reminded me a little bit of, I don't know if you guys ever watched this. I'm trying to find. Yeah, it was 2020. I think I weekly recommended it at one point. There's a show on Amazon that in theory is getting a second season, but called Tales from the Loop, mm-hmm. By Simon Stollenhag, I think. And that was there was a lot of that in this, I felt like, just in terms of the world and the design of everything. And that whole series is sort of like a more optimistic Black Mirror, you know. It's all about like how technology interacts with our lives and vice versa. And a lot of the design on that, it definitely feels like there's some influence between these two. And I think the world design on that was so awesome. So this was like that kind of stuff on steroids, you know. It was like cranked up to a whole other level, which was really cool. Yeah, I love that stuff. But Richard, what did you love about this? Because I don't know what our grades are going to be, but you sound like you might be higher on it than Kent or I are. And I'm curious
I just thought it was. There are things that I can nitpick. There are some down moments for, you're right about that kind of final bit, all that. But I will say, I thought, to his credit, it felt complete. Like, a lot of times with these things, it doesn't feel like they get it all done or there's some kind of rush to it. It felt like a complete, cohesive, like someone made the movie they wanted to make, which sounds like the most like low threshold ever. But like, I don't know. I just felt like I took all that in. Was like, that was a really solid swing of something original. We don't get things like that very often. The level of sci-fi was kind of perfect for me, right? Where it has some, it's not just completely shoot 'em up, but it's not going to go deep because I'm just not like a deep sci-fi thinker. It was kind of right in the Goldilocks zone for me in terms of the world, and the logic all made sense. And I thought this was well thought through. And I didn't think, certainly it could be done, and I'm sure there's Easter egg thing. It didn't seem like, the thing I liked most about it, it was a complete, there's a complete nature to it. It didn't seem like we are setting up the creator cinematic universe every
That's
other
for
show.
Sure.
And I dug
that's a great
that.
Point. Yeah. 100% agree with you. Yeah. Totally.
It was pretty light on the amount of characters. The characters had a weight to the story. That was good. It had a feeling like Westworld to me.
Yes.
Like an episode of Westworld. So much so that I had to look up when I got home. It's like, was John David Washington in Westworld? Is that why I'm like it feeling so much like that? But it definitely had that part. And what reminded me so much of Westworld is something that was really cool about this movie and feels like it could be, you know, its own universe, is the gadget that Allison Janney brings around that she can copy people's consciousness and upload it into a sentinel. That was really cool. And the way they use that in the cool movie, the device itself and then the story moments that they use that and why was really fun. So that felt like something you can branch off that into something really fun and interesting. And where you had to do it like 20 minutes after they die before it was too late or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was really cool technology. It works. I mean, again, the design on this is like A plus times 10. I mean, it was like an unbelievable, it's a perfect world building and design and everything. Yeah. 100%. I thought that was really cool.
And then the one other thing I wanted to comment on, actually two, one, Richard was the Radiohead needle drop. I mean, have this huge epic scene and then this really soft Kid A Radiohead song going is a really cool moment. I like that. And then the eye roll from me when they expect, I guess, the audience to just be blown away that that's his kid, that was his, you know, wife's kid is, I mean, I don't know. It didn't work for me at all. I was like, we knew this.
Yeah. There was like, again, that kind of plays a little bit into my, you know, frustration with the conclusion. To me, the big reveal was that the LA nuke wasn't AI, that it was that it was a coding error as
human error.
Human errors, like Ken Watanabe said, and that's like a throwaway line. That is a much bigger reveal to me than the other stuff that we play up a little bit. That's some of the kind of story elements. I'm like, man, I feel like we're missing on that. That's a huge deal. And it just gets sort of tossed out there in the midst of a scene. And we don't really revisit it or get back to it. I don't know. That was a strange choice for me.
This might be untrue. If it is, feel free to email us. But I've heard that the guy that invented ChatGPT or the guy that's in charge of it has like a literal kill switch on him at all times. Where if it gets too crazy, he could just kill switch the AI.
Interesting.
It's getting kind of scary. I think it got to the point this year where they had to stop developing it because it was getting too smart too quickly. And they're like, all right, let's take a break for
watch
a little
a movie.
Bit, guys.
That's all. Yeah, just watch one movie.
Let's pump
just
our break.
Try it out. That's all I'm saying.
There's no need to get this crazy this fast. And of course, this is commenting on that and like the massive extreme of what that could become. I don't see it as like any kind of warning of like, this is our future, more than like, oh, this is a fun sci-fi universe. You know, I don't think this should be taken as like a complete satire.
Yeah.
Even though it does have,
it's a little heavy on humans bad, kind of like the way that they present Alice and Janney and some of the other soldiers and stuff like that is a little heavy on that front, but not as much even as like Avatar or something like that. So, you know, it's fine.
Her character really reminded me of what's it called? Flat top haircut guy from Avatar.
Eric Lang or,
yes. Lang. Stephen Lang.
Stephen Lang. Thank you.
Flat top. That's cool. Cause he was just like a blue flat guy with a flat top in the second one. Right. It wasn't even Stephen Lang, but no spider in The Collector. I mean, the creator.
That's a drop. That's a letter grade right there. Drop down. Right. Got to have spider.
So this wasn't a huge success box office wise. It's made 30 million so far. I'd say, you know, they'll wait for it to hit 100 million before they pull it out of the theater just so they can get a little money back on this thing. But will we see more creators? If not, what's next for Gareth Edwards, Brian?
I hope not. I mean, I love this world, but I think Richard, that's a great point. This movie is not, we're just so accustomed to every movie being set up to, or being made to set up the next one and, you know, further fund the machine. This one doesn't feel that way at all. And I love that. Let's keep it that way. Let's let him do something else original, or work in a different playground or something like that. I don't need any, I've got complete closure on this movie. I don't need more of these, you know, as much as I really like this. And as much as I think the world's great, let's take those sensibilities and and plug it into a different original world or a different adapted world, whatever it's going to be. Don't need more of these. But I hope he makes another movie soon. I totally get why this took so long to put together. But yeah, 7 years is a long time. Let's I don't need you to pop out a movie every year, but like let's get something soon, man. Because I think he's really good, and I'm curious to see. I think I'm going to be interested in whatever he does for a long time. He kind of has that vibe of like, even when I have some criticisms of his movie and feel like we're missing a couple of things here and there, I'm excited for what he's going to do moving forward and what his voice is going to look like on screen.
He reminds me if Christopher Nolan only did sci-fi. I feel like this is what,
sure,
like the early days. Pre-Dark Knight, if he was only doing sci-fi movies, that's kind of where we are. Mm. I feel like he's about to have a Dark Knight moment at some point.
Sure.
Where everyone's just going to be all in on this guy, and then he's going to be able to do whatever he wants. I'm excited for that. But he doesn't have the writing sense of Nolan. You're absolutely right about that. Maybe if this was, Chris White. Yeah.
White's got some skins creds on the wall, but he would be wise to... He'd be wise to partner up with a really good scriptwriter, screenwriter, or to, comb through the blacklist.
Yeah, find scripts that just appeal to you and your sensibilities and that are already great.
Sure. Yeah, right.
Might be the way to go about it. All right, let's hit a grade here for the creator. I'm gonna give it between like a B and a B plus. So I'll go B plus. Brian.
I'm a little higher. I'm gonna go A minus. I think the world on this is worth, even if this movie sucked, like as far as the story goes and the acting, I think I would still be hard pressed not to give this a passing grade at least, or a vaguely positive grade. So it's not anywhere near that. It's not bad. It's just a little lacking here and there and a little frustrating in places. But gosh dang, the production and the design is unreal, and I love that. So A minus for me. And I do think you might be right, Richard. There's a chance I watch this again and I think, I was a little low on that. I think that's better than I maybe thought it was. But A minus for me right now.
You're a little higher than me. I'm right there with the B plus. With Kent. Yeah. But nice. Fauna, these are, again, I never have that feeling very often anymore. So I was pleasantly surprised. This one snuck up on me a bit, and I assumed it would be terrible, and it wasn't. So that's awesome. So good for the creator.
One other thing I did want to mention is the fact that this was shot on basically consumer-level cameras in the same sense that we just talked 28 Days Later on the VIP feed this week. Check that out if you want more episodes from us. MadAboutMoviesPodcast.com/VIP. That one was shot on, consumer-level camcorders back in 2003 or two, and this one the same deal, but like right now the technology on a consumer level camcorder is good enough to shoot a IMAX level movie. It's just like the technology has gotten so good in such a cheap package that you can do it that cheap. And they said that this could have cost like $300 million if they had shot it like the normal way, but like they saved so much on not having to get or rent camera equipment for this movie when you can buy $3,000 cameras or whatever they did. And
right.
That's awesome. But I got to say, we got to stop with running these movies through the fake film grain filter. This movie was littered with that. And I don't like it. Like, if you're going to shoot digital, it can look really clean and crisp. That's fine. Like, we don't have to try to dumb it down to make it look like film. And I thought this movie could have been better without that stuff. But it's encouraging.
I like that in this case. I'm normally with you, but I think I like that here. I felt like it added a little bit to the technology mix of old
and it just kind of blurs it adds a little filter over the compositing in a way.
Generally I agree with you, but I think it added a little bit to this one.
Maybe they could have just dialed it down a bit. I was like, man, this is some big
sure
big pixels I'm seeing here in the movie theater. But props to Gareth Edwards for taking that leap and like, maybe we can get more movies made cheaply that way.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's move on to Hit or Miss Recommend.
Weekly Recommends.
What you got, Brian?
Let's see. Can you go to Richard first?
I'm gonna
pull up my list here. See what
I have very few rules in life. None. Pure anarchy most of the time, as you guys know. But one is when Michael Lewis has a new book out. It's my weekly recommend. Oh, nice. So Going Infinite, Michael Lewis, about SBF and all the crypto stuff, and I don't know, probably 8 or 9% into it, and it's, you know, Michael Lewis being great, so it's the best. He's the best, and yeah, can't wait to finish it. It's one I'll be done with this week. It's awesome.
Very nice.
Brian, you got something now, or want me to go?
Yeah, my favorite album of all time, Jason Isbell's Southeastern. We mentioned Isbell, so that feels fitting. Favorite album of all time has a 10-year anniversary release that just came out on vinyl, and then on Spotify it's like has all the songs remastered, and then demo versions and live versions and a couple of previously unheard tracks and stuff. I think as Isbell is, if not the best lyricist going right now, very, very close to that list. I love his voice, and I just think yeah, like I said, it's my favorite album ever. So, 10th anniversary release, pretty cool. Sounds great on Spotify. It's great on vinyl too, obviously. Always.
You gotta, not only remastered, but remixed. I mean, the Tiesto version of Cover Me Up is pretty pumping.
Yeah. But, love this album. And I love all Isbell's stuff. This one, he had an album that came out earlier this year that's good. This, like I said, this album is just unbelievable, and has a great story behind it too. Of if you're not familiar with Isbell's his bit and his discography, he used to be in the Drive By Truckers. He had several albums out prior to Southeastern, on which all of them he is just unbelievably drunk and in a bad way, and kind of was falling into the sort of trope of I can only make music when I'm wasted kind of bit. Got sober before this album, and then this was an album that was like, he was real nervous about making it and everything of can I still, you know, can I make music while I'm not just completely blasted? And am I sacrificing my music for quality of life and whatnot? And then he turned out this unbelievably great album, probably his best piece of work. So it's really cool. Great stuff. And the 10th anniversary is some fun little additions to that, and it sounds great. I don't usually listen to demos. Like, I think that's kind of a waste of time, generally speaking, but I think these ones actually sound really cool. Like, you kind of get a real feel for the sort of the life angst that he's going through, I feel like, on some of the demos. So sounds really cool.
Very good. My recommend is No One Will Save You. Have you guys watched this yet? You seen this? You heard about this?
Yeah, I did. I watched it. Yeah, I did. Seen it.
You men.
You seen this?
You guys seen this?
It's a little sci-fi movie on the Hulu, and it's really interesting. It's Caitlin Dever. I guess she was from, what was it, Booksmart?
Yep.
Booksmart, Justified. Yeah. She's great.
She's in the lead in this. And I'm not going to give it all away, but it's about her living in this house and an alien presence kind of shows up. It's got an interesting approach to it in the fact that I don't know, really remember any dialogue in it. So it's got kind of a quiet place pace to it. And yeah, check it out. Fun little sci-fi movie. No One Will Save You on the Hulu. 90 minutes long. Perfect. Love it.
Like that.
All right. That's it from us on the main feed. Again, check out 28 Days Later. It's a convo that we're going to have right after this at Ma'am After Dark. So check that out, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.